This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA, and online at kboo.fm. I'm your host, Andrew Geller, and today we are going to squeeze one more show from the It Is Happening Here series in before we hit membership drive next Wednesday. And we'll hear more about membership drive at the end of the show. But today we are talking about the third of 14 characteristics of modern fascist states, as described in an article by Lawrence Britt, which you can find at the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm. The third characteristic is identification of scapegoats and enemies as a unifying cause. And I am on my own this week with this one. I tried to find some folks to talk about aspects of this and did locate some people, but schedules conflicted and other aspects of the show, I could not find anyone who wanted to talk about this issue, which is sort of odd. But be that as it may, I found a bunch of material about scapegoating, and I'm going to give some specific examples later on in the program. To begin, I'm going to start by talking about the origins of scapegoating and how it has literal and figurative meanings, multiple meanings, how the dynamic of scapegoating works, a little bit about the personality of scapegoaters, got some quotes to throw in, and then we'll get to some specific examples as I see scapegoating and the identification of enemies taking place both by the United States government and by the broader society, separate from the government, which is the context for all of these different characteristics as I'm doing this show. So, the scapegoat, quite literally, the scapegoat was a goat that was driven off into wilderness as part of ceremonies surrounding Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, closely following the Jewish New Year each autumn. Leviticus describes the process of the scapegoat ceremony. So from the Hebrew Bible, the process was that two very similar appearing male goats would be brought into a courtyard in the Temple of Jerusalem on Yom Kippur as part of the service that day. The priest cast lots for the two goats. One goat was offered as a burnt offering, and the second was the scapegoat. The high priest would place his hands on the head of the scapegoat and confess the sins of the people. The goat was then led away into the wilderness, according to Leviticus, although the holy book, the Talmud, adds that it may have also been pushed over a cliff. So the idea is that negative aspects of the society would be transferred to a third party, which was then cast off, cast away. In metaphor, both historically and in modern times, the scapegoat is basically someone or a group selected to bear the blame for some problem. And it's often applied to groups that are unable to defend themselves, groups or individuals unable to defend themselves. And the phenomena of guilt by association is oftentimes what drives a lot of scapegoating. Guilt by association, for those of you unfamiliar with the phrase, is a tactic employed to characterize a group of individuals according to unethical or immoral conduct by a small number of individuals that belong to that same group. Throughout history, groups that have been scapegoated cover pretty much every aspect of society, whether they be people of a different religion, a different race or ethnicity, more accurately, national origin, political belief, or just people who behave differently in some way. Organizations, governments, corporations, and individuals, again, may be scapegoated. And I'm just bouncing around here between some different resources, so bear with me if it's a little herky-jerky. This is from the Scapegoat Society, which was founded in the autumn of 1997 in Britain to study the dynamics of attributing the blame to others. They note that scapegoating shows up everywhere and always causes great anxiety and misery. You can see it in playgrounds, you can see it in little children, you can see it in adults, in family dynamics, small groups, etc. Let's see. Typically, scapegoated targets feel wrongly persecuted and receive misplaced vilification, blame, and criticism. Let me see here. Okay, this is a little bit about the psychodynamics of scapegoating. In scapegoating, feelings of guilt, aggression, blame, and suffering are transferred away from a person or group, so as to fulfill an unconscious drive to resolve or avoid such bad feelings. This is done by the displacement of responsibility and assigning blame to another who serves as a target. Insofar as the process is unconscious, it is more likely to be denied by the perpetrator. In such cases, any bad feelings, such as the perpetrator's own shame or guilt, are also likely to be denied. Scapegoating frees the perpetrator from some self-dissatisfaction and provides narcissistic gratification to him/her. It enables a self-righteous discharge of aggression. Scapegoaters tend to have extra punitive characteristics. Scapegoating also pretty much always interferes with determining what is really wrong, as the people participating in the scapegoating are inclined to feel that they have found the answer for their problem, or at least the person to blame. Now, if I could find the page I had about blame, that would be great. Maybe I can't. Okay. You get the idea, and I bet most of you understand the concept of blame. Blame is the assignment of responsibility from one to another. It's basically a universal human activity. It's observed in very young children worldwide to different extents, sort of at the onset of language mastery. And it's actually not exclusive to humans. It's been observed as a behavior in many different hominids. Lying is also often involved in assigning blame. But it is possible to assign blame through the selective use of the truth. Scope of time and events among the interactions considered is a prerequisite to any assigning of blame. A little bit more about the personality of scapegoaters. And this is from a Finnish website. These links will be at the People Rise Up website as well. Because the scapegoater is quite unconscious of what he or she is doing, there may be almost no guilt feelings. Sometimes scapegoaters actively deny her or his own actions and feelings. Frustration is acted out and projected onto someone else, usually someone without supporters or otherwise unable to protect themselves. Scapegoaters are usually dissatisfied with their own lives and themselves, and possibly with life in general. They may be self-righteous and hostile, punitive, and even sadistic. Scapegoaters receive narcissistic gratification in controlling or even torturing the scapegoat. They raise themselves up by lowering the other. Most scapegoaters are not in touch with their own feelings and often have no idea how full of hate they really are. They are just dissatisfied and frustrated, but blissfully unaware of the original source of their frustration. Scapegoaters usually have problems with their own instincts and cannot satisfy them spontaneously nor control them. They usually have a lot of desire for power, and scapegoaters tend to believe that if only the offending person or group could be somehow eliminated or mastered, everything would be well. Many scapegoaters avoid actively looking at themselves. They are constantly looking for someone else to be able to walk upon. Modern scapegoaters generally do not treat their victims as fully human, showing a lack of compassion, awareness, and psychological know-how. Ernest Bevin once wrote, "Unintelligent people always look for a scapegoat." You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. We're discussing the identification of scapegoats and enemies as a unifying principle as one of 14 characteristics of modern fascist states. There's more information at the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm/programs/4, and that's the numeral 4, .php. Now, let's toss a couple of these quotes in here. This is from Lady Nancy Astor. Quote, "In passing, also, I would like to say that the first time Adam had a chance, he laid the blame on a woman." American existential psychologist Rollo May said, quote, "Blaming the enemy implies that the enemy has the freedom to choose and act, not ourselves, and we can only react to him. This assumption, in turn, destroys our own security." Now, I'm going to take the rest of the time here to talk about some societal groups based on different classifications, religion, economic status, political belief, gender, etc., and how these groups have, not always and not necessarily even at the exact point of this broadcast occurring, but definitely in recent history, and some of it is ongoing, how these groups have all been scapegoated in one way or another. I think it's safe to say that the first group that we could look at, especially given the events of the last few years and the regime under which we find ourselves subjected here in the United States, would be to look at Muslims, practitioners of the Islamic religion. Many of you are aware that in the weeks and months following the attacks of September 11th, which have never been proven to have been committed by, well, anyone in specific, actually, and certainly it hasn't been shown that 19 men of Arab descent boarded those planes, commandeered them, but that's the story, the official conspiracy, as it were. And dark-skinned, fearing Americans all over the place took up the call, and perceptions of Muslims and attacks against Muslims, perceptions have gone down and attacks have gone up in the course of the past 4 years. There are two new polls out in the past week. Actually, both March 9th, last Thursday. From the Washington Post that day, front page. A majority say Muslims are disproportionately prone to violence, according to a new Washington Post ABC poll. Nearly half of Americans surveyed, 46%, have a negative view of Islam, 7 percentage points higher than in the months immediately following the September 11th attacks. According to the poll, the proportion of Americans who believe that Islam helps to stoke violence against non-Muslims has more than doubled since the attacks. 14% January 2002, 33% March 2006. The survey also found that 1 in 3 Americans have recently heard prejudiced comments about Muslims. In a separate question, slightly greater number, 43%, reported having heard negative remarks about Arabs. 1 in 4 Americans admitted to harboring prejudice toward Muslims, the same proportion that expressed some personal bias against Arabs. Now, if you haven't picked up on the disconnect there, the next sentence in the article says, though the two groups are often linked in popular discourse, most of the world's Muslims are not of Arab descent. I'll repeat that. Most of the world's Muslims are not of Arab descent. Do you know what the largest Muslim population country is in the world? Can you tell me the region? It's not the Middle East. Indonesia. Very good. Approximately 1,000 people were randomly selected for this survey, conducted March 2nd through 5th, 2006. The Center for American Islamic Relations also released an independent survey conducted for them on Thursday, March 9th, and it shows that about 1/4 of Americans consistently believe stereotypes like, quote, Muslims value life less than other people, and, quote, the Muslim religion teaches violence and hatred. There's many more instances of specific questions and results at the Center for American Islamic Relations website, www.cair-net.org. Back in February of 2004... and I think I missed this at the time because there's just a lot of stuff to track. February 13, in fact, 2004, reported on WorldNet Daily. Republican Representative Peter King from New York was being interviewed by radio talk host Sean Hannity in an interview that week. I guess that would be like Monday, February 8th. And he called the folks leading mosques in America, quote, an enemy living amongst us. And the idea of categorizing Muslims as enemies based on the supposed actions of 19 or so folks, which, again, hasn't been proved in any way. To me, speaks of an effort to scapegoat. We see conflation going on as well regarding Iran at the moment, and the same type of demonization that took place against Iraq without historical context or further explanation as to how things got that way, necessitating, in the administration's eyes, an invasion just about 3 years ago now. That's all going on right now with Iran. And as George Bush was unable to say, fool me once, fool me twice. Okay, the next group I want to talk about just a bit here is immigrants. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, prior to the immigrants' rights rally here in Portland, if you are not of Native American descent, then you came from immigrants. If you're white and you live in the U.S., you came from immigrants. I did. And I'm glad. There is a bill passed the House, referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee, has not been taken up for action yet. It's called the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, and Illegal Immigration Control Act of 2005, H.R. 4437. Among the things that this would do, and this is from the National Council of La Raza, it would make it more difficult for legal immigrants to actually become citizens. It would make anyone who comes to work in the U.S. subject not only to deportation, but imprisonment. It would impose a retroactive employment verification system without creating the legal channels needed for workers to lawfully be employed. And there's also aspects of it that would continue the construction of a wall between the United States and Mexico and would exempt... Actually, I'm sorry, not exempt. It would enable all state and local police to enforce federal immigration law. There's a whole lot more about this at nclr.org. National Council of La Raza is the largest national Hispanic civil rights and advocacy group in the U.S. And they will undoubtedly be doing a lot of organizing, continue to do a lot of organizing this spring as this bill makes it forward. From the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, they note that H.R. 4437 would criminalize organizations and individuals assisting undocumented immigrants. That could be social service organizations, refugee agencies, churches, legal service organizations, and anyone else, food kitchens, etc. It criminalizes being an undocumented worker. It further erodes due process laws regarding immigration process and deportation. And it turns many minor crimes into serious felonies. And much, much more. This also from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center online at ilrc.org. It's not difficult to make the case about undocumented workers being scapegoated. The irony is that, as John Conyers pointed out, representative from Michigan, in a letter last year printed online, the economy, or maybe it was the piece in The Nation that I read, I forget offhand actually, the economy of California in particular would crumble without undocumented workers. The garment and agriculture industries in this country would totally crumble without undocumented workers. So the solution, it seems, is to figure out a way to maybe boost legal immigration, especially from countries where we have a lot of people trying to emigrate from. Other groups that I'm obviously not going to be able to go into any level of detail on as we're running short on time that are also easily classified, in my opinion, as scapegoats in the past 10 or 20 years would be the poor. We saw that a lot surrounding the bungling of the response to Hurricane Katrina. From the Rocky Mountain News, March 10, just a few days ago, a Loveland, Colorado lawmaker has been blasted by his colleagues for emailing an essay written by someone else that accused, quote, welfare-pampered blacks of waiting for the government to save them from Hurricane Katrina. Representative Jim Welker, a Republican, said he forwarded the article because its message about society victimizing people because of its message about society victimizing people by making them dependent on government agencies. He did say that he didn't agree with everything in the essay. One part of the letter, however, did say, quote, President Bush is not to blame for the rampant immorality of blacks. There's been plenty of scapegoating of the poor, and specifically poor blacks, regarding Katrina. And really for the state of, it's poor people's own fault is the refrain you often hear. Wanted to also really get into talking about how women have been scapegoated. I think that might actually be its own show, because rampant sexism is another one of the characteristics we'll be looking at over the course of the next year on It Is Happening Here. And environmentalists, I didn't really get into that at all, but did a show a few weeks back regarding the ALF-ELF indictments and talking all about the counterintelligence program by the FBI and how that operated. If you have any comments or questions about anything you've heard today or any other show of People Rise Up, that is, you can contact me at kboo@riseup.net. You can also send regular mail here, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you very much for listening to the program. Next week, Wednesday, Pledge Drive starts. March 22nd, it runs 3 weeks until I think it's like April 11th. Next week on the program, we'll have Maude Barlow for an hour. She's the national chairperson of the Council of Canadians, consumer advocacy group in Canada. 2 weeks from today, we'll be speaking with Jack Huberman, author of Bush It. And in 3 weeks from today, I'll be speaking with Antonia Juhas, author of The Bush Agenda. Coming up next, Mel Ressler will be speaking with George Eisman, an educator on vegetarian nutrition. George's books include The Most Noble Diet and A Basic Course in Vegetarian and Vegan Nutrition.